minutes to nine. Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law, has joined me for another Wednesday conversation. It's lovely to see you, Gavin.
Yeah, lovely rainy day.
It is nice. And you've been, I follow you on social media. You've been back to the Berg.
Yeah.
Doing what everyone dreams of, you know, throwing a line for a brown trout in a beautiful scenario with some good mates. You live the life. I've got to compliment
thank you.
You've got
David, yeah, well, there are some things that you do that always take you to beautiful places, like a round of golf or fly fishing or riding dirt bikes, or you know, you always end up in a special sort of place that's got natural beauty and splendor. And I often wonder if we aren't totally out of touch the way some people never get out there, you know, just live in an urban environment the whole time. And I think you do need that sort of connection. We just spent like the whole day on the Bushman's River, just walking up the river and fishing all the different pools, and you kind of, you know, have a look at your watch, and 3 hours has gone by, and you don't know how that happened.
It's very restorative to connect with nature, generally speaking. That is a fact. And the gentle art of tying the fly and then luring the trout, the wily trout. And the interesting thing is, on the Bushman's River, as you've your pictures showed, quite a healthy population of brown trout.
Brown trout, yeah. So our trout in South Africa are all imported from the northern hemisphere. There are no southern hemisphere trout. The only trout ever to that are indigenous to Africa are those that come in off the sea into the Moroccan rivers. But we had two sorts of trout that we brought here primarily. The rainbow trout, which is Oncorhynchus micus, came from America, and then the brown trout, which is Selma truta, is a European trout.
And rumor has it that the brown is more difficult to fool.
Well, they're cleverer, yeah. They're definitely cleverer. I think the old world fish are just cleverer. But it's fascinating for anybody who ever wants to read into it. But the absolute battles that they had to establish trout here in the 1800s, you know, they used to bring the Ovo across on ice, and then they'd have to get from the harbour on an ox wagon or a cart all the way to, you know, the Drakensberg, and then try and populate the rivers. And the same in the Cape, you know, that most of the times these Ovo all arrived dead. Or they released the trout into the rivers, and, you know, there was no sign of them ever again because they were predated on and so forth. But, eventually they established trout in this country. And in fact, I've got a small share in Tierhoek, which is up in the Berg. And the trout there came from Loch Lomond, and they were...
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were brought out, the brown trout. And they go upriver, and they spawn, and they're sort of naturally spawning fish now. They don't get stocked.
There was a movement, I think, there is still some thought that because they are alien invaders, they should be...
Yeah, the trout wars. I mean, they happened in the early 90s, where the then Minister of Environmental Affairs decided that these were alien species and they should be eradicated.
Yeah.
And it brought up an interesting sort of philosophical argument, because at one stage, yes, of course, you know, all of us are transplants to this country, and have made a living and a success and a go of it, and we're several generations down the line, and now you can't come around and say, look, you know, we should restore everything to the sand bushmen, and the Bantu and the white should leave, and that's just not how it works. So ultimately, what was acknowledged is that the trout creates a massive industry. It's good for, you know, it's a good pastime. It creates a lot of employment. And they're here to stay. So they cooled down on all of that. There was a big outcry. I must say, fly fishermen have turned a lot to yellowfish as an alternative to trout. But the people who do it say it's a better fish to catch and weigh. There's something about a trout that's just extremely pretty.
And also, you get the advantage of, if it's a decent size and you are so inclined, it's a flipping tasty morsel
as
well.
Especially up when you're catching them in clear running water, because they don't have that muddy taste that you have on most freshwater fish. So, yeah, it is nice. I very, 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 very seldom kill them, but sometimes you hook them in a bad way. in a gill or something like that, and then they're not going to survive, and you can spirit them across to the pan. It's always worth it.
Well, you see, there is... And the yellowfish, as far as I can remember from when I was living on a big wild river and catching these things, is pretty much inedible.
I don't know of anybody who eats them, but, you know, I think there's something in it seems to be more in men than women, although I do know women who fish and fish very well, is that it's, I think it's just, it triggers something in your brain to be able to outfox something and catch it, especially with a fly that you tied yourself and that you presented in such a way that it mimics an aquatic insect. And you fool this trout into eating it, and you know that whole process. I mean, you're tying flies in the week leading up to it, and the entire process, and that sort of reward that you get from catching something.
There is that thrill when suddenly there is a strike and it's on. It's an electric.
Your line just goes alive,
and then you're alive for that moment.
You'll be in the deepest daydream, and next thing you're viscerally involved in sort of catching this fish. Yeah,
it is a joyful experience, I think, for those that have found it and been properly introduced. Because it's very difficult to become a fly fisherman unless you've been properly instructed. Because the art of throwing a fly, it's
a rabbit hole you go down, and you start reading about the history of it and the people who came before. There's a lovely book by Sidney Hay, which is he was one of the original guys who was writing about his daily fly fishing experiences in South Africa. And you start reading that, and you get an entire insight into what this country was like 100 years ago. Wow. You know, and how they used to take a little trap out of Queenstown and go up into the hills and go and look for fish and Underberg and so forth, and a lot of those fisheries and those rivers still have trout in them. Some of them aren't even really fished anymore, and all the old fly clubs, the fly fishing clubs, the Cape Piscatorial Society in Cape Town still has their offices, and you can go and read all their journals and their books and their minutes of their meetings. And so, you know, once you get involved in something, there's no end to the information and the things you can learn, and the sport itself. You know, it's also constantly evolving, which you wouldn't have thought. You'd think that fly fishing would sort of just be fly fishing, but there's modern ways to do it, and there's old-fashioned ways to do it, and so it's all very interesting.
And it can present some hazards. I remember being once with my brother-in-law who'd bought a little craft of some description, tiny little craft with a tiny little motor.
And you've got these flies whizzing past you in the air.
Well, not only that, we went into the Camberg high up onto a place called Lisieux's Dam.
Yes, I know the Lisieux's.
Have you fished? There was a fellow in a float tube and us in the middle of this, and suddenly over the hilltop came this massive cloud. And it literally covered us to the point where you could hardly see your hand in front of your face, let alone where the shore was. So you didn't know which way to go. And for about 2 hours, we were completely and utterly lost.
In circles.
At one stage, we went past the float fisherman paddling with this bizarre, strange scene. You know, in the mist. Do you know which way? No. Anyway, it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, that sort of that whole sort of Camberg, and then you go down into the Luteni. It's just it's staggeringly beautiful. I mean, I was just driving up there on Saturday, driving back to Belito, and I went that Luteni way, and it's just absolutely stunning. Those beautiful, beautiful mountains and rivers and dams and the.
It is gorgeous, and it's lovely, as you say, to be able to get away. And we are blessed in this part of the world to be able to get away to many different environments.
This is the province for that.
Yeah. Which is why I think there's a lot of focus now on the value of investing in this region because of the experiences that are to be had very, very close by.
I read an article recently also about the resurgence of the South Coast, you know. And the only real challenge is infrastructural. You know, if you can just get the municipalities to run proper infrastructures, because you are asking somebody to invest a lot of money to buy a property, and they need to know that the future is sound.
Yeah.
And I think I really get the feeling that I've been saying it to you for a long time, that that change is afoot. And I think accountability at municipal level is definitely going to come after these next elections, because, you know, we've just been in an unhealthy political space for quite a while, where there's been a party that's so dominant that it's not accountable to anyone. And if we can get them into a more bipartisan situation where they, where parties can start holding each other to account, and that's what you need. You need that sort of competition that brings out the best in everybody. Then we might see. I mean, you wouldn't worry. There's been a lot of sudden infrastructural projects all over the show. You see roads being repaired and so forth, and it is a direct consequence of the challenges that are coming from other parties saying, well, we can't continue to, yeah, to have a rubbish show. We have to have a good show, and otherwise we're going to be kicked out. So let's see. We've got this interesting time coming.
I agree with you there. But getting back to the South Coast as a proposition, and I've always loved the South Coast. We used to holiday.
They got the best beaches.
Beautiful, beautiful. The problem is, though, they don't have access to the international airport like we do. So anyone flying in is going to, you know, it's a long drive.
It's just so convenient. When I drop somebody at the airport, I sort of work on between 15 and 20 minutes from my house, you know. And, you know, I remember very well when we used to drive down to the Durban International Airport. And, I mean, that was like a, you know, you had to seriously plan properly, because
it was a haul.
You had anything on the road, any incident or whatever, you're going to miss your flight. So you kind of had to get going early. It was a long drive to go and fetch people from the airport. And yeah, that was a big advantage and a game changer for the North Coast. And it'll continue. You will have, you will always have people who prefer it more quiet. And, you know, those sort of sleepy towns that you have on the South Coast.
Invariably, that is that. And I think a lot of folk that bought in Ballito for exactly that purpose are finding that their quiet lifestyle has been somewhat changed. Of course, you know, looking at the advantages that many different options at the various shopping centres have presented.
Yeah, and the hospitals.
For all sorts of entertainment purposes.
Yeah, whether you've got good hospitals all around, and you've got, you know, you don't have any of those sort of issues that, you know, that you might have if you're more remote, sort of, especially if you're far down the South Coast and you need medical attention or something. It's going to be a hack. Yeah. So yeah, we've got all the advantages here. Different strokes for different folks. I think some people just really like it. I don't like reading about sort of failing sewage systems and pumping them into the lagoons and. Yeah. And so those are sort of things they're going to have to clean up, which I think we've done reasonably well at improving here.
Well, I was very interested to hear. I was in conversation with the Zimbali Lakes folk the other day, and one of their huge contributions is the management now of that estuary that has been under fire for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted to hear that, because clearly everyone benefits from that.
I told you I had a game of golf there last week, and I was so impressed by that golf course.
It
really is spectacular. And it's a new golf course, so you would have expected that it would be fairly rough around the edges. It wasn't. It's perfectly manicured. The greens are perfect. The fairways are perfect. The bunkers are perfect. It was just an absolute joy to play there.
And they've imported that special bent grass.
Yes, it's got a salt resilience, and so, which is nice, because if you have any sorts of weeds, you just spray salt water on them, and the grass survives and the weeds die. So I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but we're so fortunate just to have another great golf course on our doorstep.
I think it is fair to say that it probably is one of the last to be built now for some time, because of the cost. The cost of building a course is extraordinary. But it also has the benefit of being an Ernie Els signature course, which means, apparently, according to our friends from the developers of the estate, there is a very large contingent of folk that have a bucket list of courses that they want to play worldwide, and they extend around the globe. And now on the bucket list is this course in South Africa, the Ernie Els
It is very pretty, and it's laid out beautifully.
So there is this that we've got these attractions for the international market, which will definitely stimulate international air traffic. I would imagine that there will be regular flights soon to and from KZN to the rest of the world.
To Air France. That'll be probably be bringing all the guys to Club Med and so forth.
One area of development that is always of concern is on the beachfront or waterfront, and then when it comes to things like height restriction. I know that there is a proposal at the moment, which Penny Furie, our investigative journalist, is looking at, for what is currently a bit of a green space. It was a little shopping center in the village, in front of Concha or next to Concha, in front of Mozambique restaurant. That's little green space, which has got tables on it, and at the moment is well, it is a site for future construction, and believe the construction company or the developers have applied for permission to exceed the current building limits on height, because it won't be economically viable for them to build something unless they can go up several stories and capitalize on their investment that way. And one can understand the requirement, but again comes the Umhlanga situation. Well, everything behind that, depending on how high it goes, will be in shadow until about midday, which is maybe
you've got a shopping center behind it, so I don't think it'll make too much difference to that center. I've got an office behind that in the Belito Center, and my personal view, I must obviously declare that I have some interest in it, but I personally think that that little part of Belito is crying out for some kind of upgrade, you know, and they've got that that building that they've just done right in front there. I mean, that was a good addition. It looks like it's a good project. It's going ahead at full steam, and they're building quickly, and they've reached the top floor already. So I think that whole area is just crying out for some kind of improvement, you know, because it is a little zone down there that's just so dilapidated, and you know, the only thing that to me I think needs to be done there is the parking issue. It's you know, so whomever develops and however they develop it, they would have to have some subterranean parking so that we can get a lot of cars off the streets.
Well, I believe that's part of the developer's plan, is to go down a couple of stories into the bowels.
It's going to be a difficult build because there's not much place to move. There's hardly place to swing a spade. So, anyway, obviously the builders know what they're doing. So,
it's going to be interesting, and you know, progress is as it is, and we're keeping an eye closely on developments that pop up, and people, generally speaking, well, you know. It depends which camp you fall into. If you happen to have an interest in the development under question, well, then you're wildly pro the idea.
There's always going to be different points of view, and it's always the people that are nearest that are most affected. And so that's probably why you normally have to give all your neighbors notice and get their permissions
as well.
I think
it's important to at least be seen to be playing the game. You know, some of these fellows, the developers, have come along with a bit of a surprise approach. Well, you know, we advertised. You didn't read that Zulu newspaper in Richards Bay. Oh, you should have. We advertised it.
Sounds like the opening lines to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, it's always fun keeping an eye on things, and no doubt there will be lots and lots in the days and weeks and months to come to chat about. It's always lovely having a moment on air with Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law. I look forward to the long form conversation when we go fully podcast shortly, so we can then really talk about what we want to and express things the way we would like.
I'd love that.
Yeah, it's a little nerve wracking when you're at risk of breaking some kind of journalistic code.
There's some reticence at times.
Oh, no. One has to be. You have to keep it very polite and tidy. This is a general populist station, but when we go podcast, the gloves come off and we can really lay it down.
I'm in for that, Dave.
And we'll catch up in a week's time for another Wednesday morning conversation.
Excellent.
Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law, practices from the Belito village. You'll find him in the Kloppers Inc. Livery, and a very, very good attorney, especially if you have a property matter of some burning concern. Go and have a chat to him. Highly recommended. The morning show continues.